This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by our friends at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And we've talked many times about how professional and how knowledgeable the vacation planners are at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. But, you know, more importantly, they're fans of the perfect vacation. So if you're looking for that perfect vacation, you need to look no further than to visit MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com, or just click on their banner on the Mickey Miles Podcast website, and perfection awaits you.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 89 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today and other places. And with me on the show today is Michelle Scribner-McLean. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm doing okay. I've been recovering from a little sinus infection, and today I went out on a 14-mile run, and it's interesting following Jeff Galloway's program because I'm finding that I have to run a lot slower. So anyway, I'm trying to keep the faith, and I've recovered, I guess. So how are you today?
I'm just Jim Dandy, and I'm waiting for that shout-out.
You're Jim Dandy? That's good. Well, the shout-out today is to a running buddy of ours whose name is Julie Olson. And I posted a picture of Expedition Everest and asked people who had stopped during the marathon to ride, because a lot of people do. Not me, but a lot of people do. I don't know. Maybe next time I will, but I think I was just nervous about finishing. Anyway, Julie has done it, and I think that's really cool. And she says she has no regrets. So she's a big supporter of the podcast. So shout out to Julie Olson.
Hi, Julie. And to Julie and everyone out there who's listening, it's time for questions and discussions on things that have popped into our inbox as well as on the Facebook page. So we're going to start off, as we always do with questions, with having ladies first. So Michelle, why don't you read the first question?
Okay, so the first question is from Brian Calhoun. Actually, it's not a question. He's kind of adding to our podcast that we did about Disney Fantasy Island, Run Disney Fantasy Island. And he says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I really enjoy and appreciate the Mickey Miles podcast. It's inspirational." Why, thank you, Brian. "It's entertaining and informative. I look forward to hearing from you each week. I also hope everything's going well for both of you and that Mike continues his recovery. Your fantasy episode led me to come up with a few Run Disney fantasies of my own. Here they are. A magical shower that is able to generate an instant ice bath for those who enjoy such a thing." I like that idea. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. "A magical running path that allows runners to safely run inside attractions and even along monorail paths."
That'd be kind of neat.
Yeah, that would be cool. "More nighttime races. A huge swimming pool available to runners at the end of the race. A vegetarian equivalent of Le Cellier's cheddar cheese soup." Little to do with running, but I'm on a roll. "And these would quickly become my favorite things. Thanks again for the podcast. They're a lot of fun. See you on the road." Thank you, Brian. That's cool. And if anybody else has any more ideas of what they could do for their fantasy Run Disney Island, please let us know. We'll share them on the show.
I like Brian's thought about magical path running through attractions, so that would be pretty cool.
But. Well, do you think there should be, I mean, we kind of talked about this at the beginning of the show where Julie Olson ran through, during the race, she stopped and rode Expedition Everest. Do you think there should be a runner's line during those races?
Well, if you think about it, if that was during, if that's the case, usually the park is closed and it's only runners anyway.
Right. But when you get to Animal Kingdom towards the end of the marathon.
Oh, the marathon.
Yeah.
don't know. I think that the guests who are not runners are pretty disturbed about some of the runners as it is, so making it a little bit more difficult for
maybe
them to attract.
They should have the attractions open. Wouldn't it be cool to ride Buzz Lightyear in the middle of, or Space Mountain in the middle of your run?
Well, I'm thinking about those people who would be sitting in my seat after I leave, and I'm all sweaty.
Yeah. Okay.
It's going to be a win-win situation. Our second question comment comes from Marlon Yoder, who says, I have never run any race with Disney, and as I am running the 50 states and want to make the 2015 Walt Disney World Marathon, my Florida Marathon, actually the Dumbo Double Dare, Double Dare is in California. As I have run a double marathon and up to 50-mile ultras, I am not worried about the distance, but the question I have is this. I am a Starwood member and have quite a few points, so to save money, I would like to stay at the Swan or Dolphin. How would that be from the standpoint of convenience for all the races? I don't mind having to walk back after running, so transportation is not much of an issue, but my family will be with me and will also be trying to see me at different points of the races. So, Michelle, he wants to know if there would be an issue by staying at the Swan or Dolphin. I don't see any at all.
Well, first of all, Marlon, I think Mike started to say this, but the Dumbo Double Dare is actually in California. Right. So you're probably looking at the Goofy, it sounds like, from your experience, or the Dopey. But I have stayed at the Dolphin, and, you know, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump past the Boardwalk or the Beach Club, and I think it would be a very nice place to stay after the races. The thing I'm not sure about, though, is the buses for the races, but you could quickly walk over to the Yacht Club or the Boardwalk or the Beach Club and catch a bus over to the beginning of the race at Epcot. And then afterwards, if you wanted to walk through Epcot and the International Gateway, you'd probably have another mile and a half back walk to your hotel room if you wanted to, or you could just hop on a bus again. So I think it's a great option. It's if I'm not staying at Beach Club or Boardwalk, I have really enjoyed staying at the Dolphin. It doesn't have the Disney theming, but it is very, very close to everything, and you can, it is a good option. What do you think, Mike?
Well, the key here is, again, getting to and from the races, and like Michelle said, the easy thing to do would be just to take a stroll from either the Swan or Dolphin. And if you're at the Dolphin, I would walk to, well, I guess it doesn't matter which one it is. I would
probably Yacht Club would be closest.
I would say the Yacht Club,
yeah.
Walk to the Yacht Club. It's probably the closest host resort, and take a bus to the start, unless you're driving, of course. And but you can't walk through Epcot unless you have your admission, so that's
right. That's a good point.
So take the bus back to
the other thing that I'm not sure about is there's a parking fee at the Dolphin, the Swan and Dolphin. It's $10 or $11
a day.
I don't know when I've stayed there if I've had a car. I think that applies to people staying there as well.
Yeah, as far as I know, I have driven to the Swan and Dolphin and had dinner there with friends, and they've validated my ticket, and I haven't had to pay, but I don't know if they do that for guests. The last time I had heard, and I'm not too sure about this, even the guests are given a bill for parking there every day.
Hmm. There is some sort of an extra fee there. I know we're not a hotel podcast, but there is some sort of a resort fee that you have to pay, but there are also good discounts. I got a discount because I'm a government employee and I'm a teacher, so look for those types of discounts. So I think there's AAA, maybe AARP. So when you look on the website, there's a little pop-down window that gives you different options. So
he has Starwood points, so he probably gets.
Oh, right. He said that. All right. So the next question is from John Earnhardt, and he says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. My family will be traveling to WDW for the Princess Half Weekend, but we are having some problems choosing a resort. We are frequent travelers to the world and have always stayed on property at a moderate or deluxe. However, it seems that the prices are ridiculous this time. I can get a room at the Waldorf Astoria for about the same money as Coronado. My wife will be running, and we have two children, so the transportation to the race is a concern for staying off property, along with all the other various drawbacks of staying off property. So my question is, what do you think? Where do you recommend on and off property for the Princess Half? The rooms at Scopa Towers are too small for our family of four. Thanks for all you guys do. Love the podcast. We should probably explain what Scopa Towers is for people who don't listen to. I know everybody listens to WDW today, but
put on my WDW today hat. Scopa Towers was the name given to Pop Century by my WDW today colleague, Len Testa, because I guess I spent something like in the first year or two it was open, I spent about 120 nights there. I just really enjoyed it, so that's why it's Scopa Towers. Now, John, my suggestion would be to think about a suite at the Art of Animation. You could think about that, although I'm not sure if the prices for the suites at the Art of Animation are less than what you would find at a moderate. One moderate I would suggest looking into is Coronado. For some reason, Coronado, like you said, is very much one of the lesser priced moderates. So I would stick with that. As far as off the property goes, it's going to depend upon how much time you want to spend getting ready and going to the race. If you're staying off the property, my assumption is that you're going to have a rental car. If that's the case, then you need to figure out how long of a drive in the morning when you go to the race would you want to drive. So it's one of those questions that is very hard to answer because everybody has different likes and needs. And so think about what's important. Think about if you need to get up early, if you want to get close to be on the Disney experience, and let us know how you make out. I think that the moderates are, again, Coronado would be a choice. The Art of Animation is a choice too. So,
okay, so I'm gonna throw some other suggestions out there too. One suggestion would be to consider looking at a rental place, maybe All-Star Vacation Home, if you're looking for more space, but that would require that you have a car. It sounds to me like he wants to stay on Disney property, if possible, because Mikey said he's looking at the Waldorf Astoria as the same price as Coronado, and, you know, that's definitely more upscale. Here's another suggestion, though. You can also rent Disney Vacation Club points from different places. So another option is to rent Disney Vacation Club points because you could get a one-bedroom or a two-bedroom. And a lot of times, I haven't done it, but I've heard that people say it's a pretty good deal. So I know that one place that our friend Barry works and recommends is David's Disney Vacation Club Rentals, DVC Rentals. They have a website, and they also have a page on Facebook. So you could go try out that page and see if you could get some deals for Marathon Weekend. And, of course, another option is to, if you haven't already, check out our friends at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel because they might have some options for race weekends that you haven't considered because they usually have a group rate. They buy a block of rooms, and you may get a good deal. So hopefully those will give you some options, John.
Good luck, John. Our next question comes from the great state of Texas, and it's Ray from Texas. And Ray says, hello, this is Ray from Texas. I am starting to train for the full marathon, and I had a question regarding fueling. I normally carry my gels for half marathons, but I know that I will need some more than that for a full marathon. What does Disney generally provide during the race? Also, how do you train with fueling for the marathons? Thank you. Okay, Ray. Well, first off, if you have done half marathons, then you have an idea as to how often you need to replenish those electrolytes, how often you drink, how often you eat. Now, if you go to a Run Disney Marathon, what you're going to find, and Michelle, I'll ask you to, you know, validate this, I guess, is that during the second half marathon, during the last, oh, I'd say 20K of the marathon, Disney will compress the amount of water stops and fueling stops, and they recognize that the glycogen stores begin to deplete when you're going into that 15, 18, 20 mile mark. So they're ready, and they'll have all kinds of nutrition for you waiting, as well as a lot of water and Powerade. So be aware of that. But what you should think about is how you would continue your fueling and refueling during the race, and try to get an idea as to when you need to ingest water and or nutrition before you're going to need it. I've heard many times that there are people who, well, I'll hold off. And that's not the smart thing to do. What you want to do is you want to make sure that you never get thirsty, that you never get hungry, that you're on an even keel, that you're not going through hills and valleys. And it's just like when you're doing the Galloway method. If you continue doing everything on a steady pace, then you won't get tired. You won't fall into a valley. So that's my two cents. Michelle?
So two great questions. I have run the second half of the Disney Marathon actually twice, because Mike and I did the marathon relay 2 years ago, the Chippendale Marathon Relay that they don't do anymore. And I ran the second half of that, and I also ran the marathon. So what you'll find, Ray, is that about mile 9, you'll get your first offer of goo. And I usually start the race with about 3 or 4, and I find that, I take the ones that Disney offers, and if I find that I'm running low, I just ask for 2. I've never had anybody have an issue with this. Then you'll find that later on in the race, you'll be offered bananas. You'll be offered chocolate bars, those little tiny chocolate bars. Last year it was so hot that they melted right away, so they got all over you. But you'll be offered, I believe you're offered goo another time as well. So don't worry about that. I think you should plan. Everybody's different. You should plan for how many you need to get you to mile 9. But after that, you can ask for extra ones. The other question about fueling, I think Mike gave a great answer. I think what Goo recommends is that you have one 15 minutes before you start running. And so for me, what I always do is when I'm in the corrals and I know I'm about 15 minutes away, I have my first Goo. You'll see a lot of other runners doing that too. And then about every 30 minutes, because as Mike said, you want to keep ahead. You don't want to get to the point where you're hungry. You want to keep ahead of the hunger. When you get to the point where you're hungry, you might be a little bit too late. You might be putting yourself in danger of bonking or kind of running out of your energy. So to stay ahead of it, every 30 minutes, have another one, and you should be all set. It's something that you should try to work out when you're training so that you know your own body and you know when you need to take that extra goo. But that's part of what the training is for, to figure that stuff out before you go to the race.
Good luck, Ray.
All right. So our next, it's not a question, it's actually a suggestion, is from Phil Taylor. And he says, hi, guys. Not sure if you've seen this first-year race in Celebration, Florida. I know it's not a Disney race, but since Disney built Celebration, it's about as close as you can get to being a Disney race without actually being a Disney race. So he gave a link. There's a brand new marathon, or I don't know if it's a marathon or a half marathon, but it looks like a marathon. It's at www.celebrationmarathon.com. And Celebration is, how far away would you say, Mike, by car? You can't get to Celebration on Disney transportation, but it's probably 10 or 15 minutes?
Yeah, it's probably between 5 and 10 miles. Well, from the Disney archway, I'm guessing that, depending upon which way you go, it's probably about between 5 and 10 miles away.
Yeah, the residents can see the Epcot fireworks, yeah. So it's not too far away. If you've never been there, it's a very quaint planned community, and it was designed by Disney, so might be interesting. Yeah. So I'd love to hear if people run that, to hear what it's like.
Our next question comes from Megan Castle. And she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. My name is Megan Cassell, and I am from Hershey, Pennsylvania. I recently found your podcast, and it has become a valuable resource for me. I am not the fastest runner, but I signed up to do the Dopey Challenge in January on a whim. I have run 6 marathons, 3 of them Disney, but never a goofy challenge. My question is related to training. I am a nurse, and I have a unique work situation where I work every weekend. I work 7 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. every Friday and Saturday night. Therefore, my training occurs during the week, and I usually do my long run on Thursdays. The 23-mile long run occurs during Thanksgiving week. I don't want to miss Thanksgiving with my family for training. I know that the training plan is meant to simulate the Dopey Challenge, but would I be okay changing around the runs just for that week? Here is what I am thinking. Sunday, 4 miles after I sleep for maybe 3 hours or so in the morning when I get home. Monday, 10 miles. Tuesday, 23 miles. Wednesday, 20 to 30 minutes. Thursday, 30 to 45 minutes. I usually do a turkey trot 5K race every year. I only get 2 weekends off a year, so the turkey trot is one of the few races that I can actually do because it is during the week. I also have another question.
Should we stop for that one first?
Yeah, so let's talk about that first.
First of all, she only gets 2 weekends off a year. What a dedicated nurse. My goodness.
Well, she gets 2 Saturdays and Sundays off.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Her weekend may be our week.
Yes, yes, yes. So, I, you know, one of the things that happens is life. when you're training, I think it's difficult. I know for me, I had to work things around having just a really bad cold this week. And I don't think it's a big deal if you change your 23-mile run to a week earlier or a week later. Your fitness is still going to be there. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think that the key that Michelle hit upon was the fitness level. And you don't lose your fitness for a marathon unless you don't run for like 4 weeks. So you should be okay. I think just altering the schedule between 24 and 48 hours it's almost like it's not touching it at all. So I wouldn't be concerned about it, Megan. I think you'd be okay.
What a planner to plan already for November to see what she's going to do.
Yeah. All right, let's go to her second question, Michelle. She says, "I also have another question. My husband and I are concerned that if I walk the first 3 races, which is the 5K, the 10K, and the half marathon, that I won't finish in the time allotted. My pace is around a 13-minute mile pace when running. I told you I was slow. I am currently doing 2 minutes run. Two-minute run, 1-minute walk with training, although after listening to Jeff, I am considering doing a 1-1 ratio. Should I consider maybe reversing it and doing a 2-minute walk and a 1-minute run on race day? Do you have any thoughts related to this? Thank you so much for providing such a valuable resource. Have a great week." Okay, Michelle, so Megan is talking about the run-walk-1 ratio that she's doing now, and she wants to know if she should change it. You're training using Jeff Galloway's training plan. What do you think?
This is a really interesting question. Well, the first thing is that a 13-minute mile pace, you're going to be fine. So even if we stop right there, you're going to have no problems at all, especially having done marathons before. You're going to be absolutely fine. So if you want to keep on doing what you're doing, that's fine. My pace is just a little bit faster than that, and he has me doing, right now, for my long runs, 20-40. So I'm running for 20 seconds, walking for 40 seconds. It is a lot slower than what I'm used to, but the idea is that I'm going to get through all those 4 days and be okay. So you might want to ask this question the next time we have Jeff Galloway come on. And I think, you know, maybe if you just email him, he may answer the question anyway. He's so open and helpful. I don't think he's going to set out a whole training program for you, but I think that whatever you decide to do, Megan, you should have it nailed down by November so that you're not changing anything, you know, by the time you entering December and getting into January. I think you might want to try a 1-1. I think I have been surprised. I think Mike has been surprised when we've tried to change our ratios. We used to do 4-1s or 3-1s, and you do go faster, at least for us. We did go a little bit faster with changing the ratio. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I guess the bottom line is with a 13-minute mile, you're going to be absolutely fine.
Yeah, I think you'll be okay. I think that there are all kinds of things that people, all little wrinkles that people will add to their training just to play it safe and make sure that they do the race and the allotted pace. I think that the thing that I want you to keep in mind, Megan, is that the most important days that weekend, and Jeff will say the same thing, are those first 3 days. And it's important that you do what you plan to do, and that is take it easy on those 3 days so that when marathon day comes, you will have something left in the tank. So I think if you did the 5K, the 10K, and the half, and you did it at the maximum pace allowed, I think that's a smart thing. I think that's a very smart thing. I'm not doing the marathon. I'm just doing the first three, and I'm planning on taking it easy the first 2 days, and that last day, whatever I have left over, I'll give it my best. But my concern is to always have that last race in mind, and I think that that would be important for you. So good luck.
And I think even beyond that, it's to be able to walk and have activity for the rest of the day and for the rest of your stay at Walt Disney World. So I don't think anybody is using the dopey as any time to get PRs. It's just getting through it. So, yeah. All right, our last question is actually somebody else sharing something, too. I think this is so great when people share things. So it is from our friend Pamela Potter Frost. And she says, I wanted to share a link with you. I just listened to your podcast, episode 87. A listener had a question about running with ulcerative colitis. And she says that Sarah McGovern from rad-living.com and runningatdisney.com has ulcerative colitis and has run the WDW marathon last year. So she is recommending for the listener who had that issue to read her blogs because she has great advice. So that's great. Thank you so much, Pamela.
Yeah. So good questions, Michelle, as always. And we want to encourage everyone to keep sending them in, because as much as we try to think of all the little things that we would love to talk to everybody about and trying to help everyone, we can always know what every person is needing or needs to know. So please keep those cards and letters coming. And Michelle, do you have any last minute pieces of advice for those of us who...
No, but I heard the Disneyland waivers are available. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so if you're running Disneyland, you might want to check your email and check over at Run Disney. You can print out your waiver.
Yes, you can. And you don't want to wait till the last minute because you might just forget. And then you're at the long lines at the expo.
Yeah, print out that waiver.
That's right. And we want everyone to know that and remember that this episode has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. These guys are problem solvers. They're dream makers. They'll help you plan your next vacation. It doesn't have to be a Disney one. It can be any type of vacation anywhere in the world. And they do it without any fees. So visit them at Mouse Fan Travel. Or MEI-travel.com, or even better, click on their banner on the Mickey Mouse Podcast website. So, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, my name is Mike Scopa. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.